I'm going to talk to you about transforming your library with technology, but I'm going to talk about kind of old-fashioned technology, as in technology that has cranks and gears and parts instead of software, because these guys can cover the software quite well. So my premise is that with some of these more hardware-oriented solutions, we can provide much better service to our customers. We can create much more fun and creative jobs for library workers, and we can create new possibilities for libraries to use the physical space of the library. So I'm going to talk a fair amount about what we need to do in order to use those physical spaces differently. And the reason that I wanted, that my argument is that we need to use the physical spaces differently, is because of a study that came out with KRC Research in 2006. ALA did a study. In that study, they found out that 63% of Americans do indeed have a library card. The problem is that only 26% of those 63% had actually gone to the library in the last year, which tells me that we all know that everybody loves the library. They think it's a great civic institution, but that doesn't translate into actually using the library. So they love the library, but they don't actually use it. Somebody is using it, however, and who is that? Well, the study goes on to say that the 90% of the people using the library have incomes within the range of $15,000 and $35,000 a year. That tells me that the people who are using the library are doing it because they don't have as many options as some of the rest of us. I'm not even going to mention the names of the services that those other people are using that can afford it. They can pay for things like overnight service, and they can pay for online things that are going to come to them in the mail. So basically, my belief is that we can't continue to rely on this idea that the book is the library brand. OCLC did a study, and they found out that the book is the library brand, but the question is, you know, does that do us any good? Because who else has a brand of the book? Amazon.com has a brand of the book, but we don't really want to compete with them. So the thing is, we need to start building on the library as that third place. A lot of people have talked about it as, you go to home, you go to work, and the library can be that other place that you go. So what I'm going to talk about today is how we can start making changes to transform our libraries into places that are that third place, that are a community center, are an information commons on the campus. I'm going to rely on these three points, which I think are keys to what make libraries that work, work. Libraries that really work take advantage of technology and automation whenever possible. They're efficient. They get rid of as much clerical work as they possibly can. They offer very convenient services to their customers. And in doing all of that, they create opportunities for their library staff to do really fun and interesting things. They're also really creative about how they use that space. In libraries, public libraries in particular, we have teens, we have children, we have seniors coming into the library. The things that those three groups of people want to do are very different from one to the other. We have people who want to use the computers. We also have people who really don't want to use the computers. So these spaces need to be different for those people. Successful libraries also establish a strong technology staff. Just look at the people on this panel, and you can see the kinds of things that can be done when you have a library staff that really knows how to use technology. Essentially, we can't transform anything if we don't know how to use the tools. We have to start building library IT departments that make sense for the kind of technology that we're using in our libraries today. So what I want to do is talk about some specific kinds of technology that I think is potentially transformative. Now, most of this stuff is not cutting edge or certainly not bleeding edge, but it's technology that some libraries use, but it's technology that a lot of libraries don't use, and I don't quite understand why more aren't using it. So I'm going to make an argument for more libraries to use this. An automated central sorting system is a system that essentially, if you've got multiple branches, All of the material that's moving between your branches comes to one central location, goes through an automated sorting system, and gets sorted out into bins that then get delivered back to your individual libraries. This is great because it does a whole lot more than sorting. What central sorting systems can be set up to do is they can check in all the items that go through that system, and they can recharge or discharge them depending on which way you want to go. That's two scans right there that you've saved from the branch personnel. They can separate holds from items that are ready to be shelved. They can shelve them in a way that they are ready to be put on the shelf. They can be sorted out to bins for, you know, movement directly to the delivery truck, or they can be sorted out to carts so that they can be put on the shelves. The point is, you put them in the little feeder, and they come out ready to go. You've saved yourself a whole bunch of extra work of preparing holds. How many of you, I don't even want to know what everybody does to prepare their holds. My local library had the most horrible system. I can only say this now because they've changed it, but in order to protect the patron privacy, what they did was they would organize all of the items on the self-pickup hold shelf by library book title. Now, this is the one way to absolutely ensure that every person who comes in to pick up their own holds will have to use a computer or bother your staff. I can't put one book on hold and be able to remember it if I come 2 days later what the title of the book was. Imagine if you've got five or six items, you have to remember all the titles, you have to remember, you know, you have to find them through all the shelves, and you have to know how a librarian might shelve them. One of the items I noticed on the shelf was Kitty Carlisle's Key to Knitting. No, I can't say Kitty. Jennifer Carlisle's Key to Knitting, right? So where was it shelved? Right, but only you guys would know that. Right? I mean, I was standing there, I was working with this library, and I see, you know, Key to Knitting, and it's, you know, totally in the wrong place. It should have been, you know, in the case. And I want to be helpful. I'm there as a consultant, so I said, "You guys, yeah, I think you got a mistake here." And they said, "No." They pull it out. They show me in the really small type, you know. So the point is, you don't have to do a lot of the steps involved in a self-service hold. I don't know how many of you are using central sorting systems, but they can be set up so that you spit out all the items that are going to be filled with a hold, and it causes a label to be printed out automatically. So then you do have to have a human being that matches the slip with the book and puts it on the shelf, but that's a lot less work than, you know, what I see a lot of people do. Whoops, sorry. I want to talk about automated check-in. Oh, here, one other thing. Just to give you a kind of a price tag on the central sorting system, I have done some work on evaluating the workflow of some libraries. And based on this one library that I've worked with, where we looked at how long it took them to do some things, which, by the way, you know, they did pretty well. I have to say that, again, as a consultant, I went into this library. They wanted me to analyze workflow. And as I was working with them, I was thinking, geez, they're doing pretty well. What am I going to do? You know, I don't have anything to suggest to them. But, you know, we do have some automation answers. Luckily, they have good systems. But even with their good systems, if we put in a central sorting system for this library, I'm fairly certain that we could save 2 minutes per hold request. So based on my, again, this is totally unscientific. If they save 2 minutes per hold request, that would pay for a $700,000 central sorting system with 19 bins. That would pay for itself in 210,000 holds processed. So how many holds do you process in a year? Does anybody know? I think it's basically something like a 2 to 4 year return on investment, which I think is pretty good for pretty expensive technology. Now to automated check-in. So an automated check-in, say you have a these can be internal, they can be outside of the library. So somebody can walk in using a barcode or an RFID tag. These are not only for people with RFID. The patron can check in their own item. Again, the best thing is to have on the back side at least 3 bins to sort to so that you can separate those holds, separate the returns, spit out the hold slip if you need to, and save those extra steps. You don't need a lot of space to do this. Basically, the smallest space, I'm told, at least by one of the vendors, is that you could do this with an 8x8-foot space on the back side of this automated check-in machine. The best price I had seen on something like this, it was $161,000, 5-bin sorter with automated check-in. I am advised that you can get one for closer to $100,000, so the prices are coming down. Again, my unscientific analysis is that you can save yourself 30 seconds per circulation. So again, my library circulates about 2 million items a year. I'm figuring that saves them 277 hours in 1 year. And I'm hoping that you can think of something very useful to do with somebody's extra 277 hours that they're not spent scanning books. Taking it one more step further, essentially these self-check kiosks also kind of build on these existing systems. If you attach them to the back side of, you know, with a sorter, you've got all these, the sorting benefits. If you have automated check-in, you've got the check-in benefits. Also, these same kiosks can be used to add value to, say, your account if you're allowing patrons to pay for fines or pay for copying or do whatever they do in terms of money. Let them do it at these self-check kiosks so they can essentially do all of those administrative, clerical, no-fun things at these self-service stations instead of having people in the library spend time doing that. One of the reasons that I really like getting rid of this materials handling, getting it out of the hands of the library worker, is I want librarians to be dealing with people who are in an anomalous state of knowledge. Do you remember that from library school? When you were doing information retrieval or, you know, the study of how people come to, you know, realize that they need some more information about something. They find themselves in an anomalous state of knowledge. I love that image of all these people roaming around the library in an anomalous state of knowledge. So the summary is, all of this automation gets items back on the shelf faster, which means when you get the items back on the shelf faster, there's fewer times that they have to start moving around the system because you've got them back on the shelf, and so you don't have to get one from the other library to fill a hold. So that's one big benefit. It's also just more efficient for your library staff. I would rather that these machines that don't have nerve endings are doing all of this repetitious work. That's what they were designed to do, instead of librarians who actually have wrists and carpal tunnels and things that can go bad. Ultimately, the other thing is, you know, the bottom line is, materials handling will save you money. It may take you longer if you're a smaller library. If you're a larger library, it's a slam dunk. It's going to save you money very fast. So part of the point is we want to start using our spaces differently. Instead of being places that people walk into and they see these clerical people standing there scanning stuff, we want to bring out front the things you can do in the library, the people you can connect to at the library, the cool, fun activities that happen in the library, and the great resources, whether it's people or materials, that you can find in the library. But that doesn't mean we can just get rid of the books. In fact, one of the things about the books is that we're kind of in a bind in so far as not only are we in the business of providing, servicing the long tail. How many of you are familiar with the long tail? Okay, so everybody's heard about the long tail. The idea is that there's all these really great materials that very few people want, but you got to keep it around, right? It's the best stuff in the library. It's stuck in the shelves. It only comes out maybe once a year, maybe once every 5 years, but you can't weed it out. It's got to be kept. The problem is libraries also have to service the body of that curve. We have to have the popular items. We have to have their fiction. We have to have 500 copies of Harry Potter when it comes out. So you have to be able to service the long tail and the short tail. That means we have to have better ways of storing our materials, our books. One thing to think about is high-density shelving. I don't see it in libraries very often, more so in academic libraries. But this is a way to at least double your capacity, if not more. Basically, if you have a very low-use area, you can have several of these shelves lined up with only, you know, one opening to all of them, and you can really double, triple, and quadruple your capacity. They say that these are publicly browsable, but my personal belief is that that can be very dangerous. People have been known to get stuck in those things, so I would stick to that as a solution for just staff storage areas. But what a good solution for the public, this is not publicly browsable, but an even better solution is compact shelving with an automated retrieval system. Now, what this is these huge boxes that you can see, the metal big tall thing, are huge metal boxes that can contain anywhere from 40 to maybe even 80 books, depending on the size of the book. It doesn't matter how they're organized in the books. The machine keeps track of what book is in which of those secret little boxes. The cool thing about these systems is they are temperature controlled, they are climate controlled, they are really good in terms of preservation for the items that are in these things. They do require some kind of participation on the part of human beings, because the human beings actually drop the item in the box or take the item out of the box. What the system does is it keeps track of where everything is and pulls it off the shelf for you. Now, you may think that's a great idea, but it costs an arm and a leg, we're just a little library. If you're a teeny little library, it probably doesn't make sense. If you work with a larger library system, it might make sense. Maybe you work with, you coordinate this and have it make sense with interlibrary loan. But the fact is, if you're building a new library, this is a very efficient way to do things. The University of Utah compared some costs, and they found that if they built shelving to store all of their material in publicly accessible shelves, it was going to cost them $20 per item. If they did it with the compact storage, with the automated retrieval, it was only going to be $4 per item to store those items. That's a huge savings. The University of Chicago recently debuted their system. They compared several options. Three of the options were publicly browsable storage for their entire collection. Cost to build that, $67 million. A much cheaper option is to keep a bunch of their collection off-site with no automation. That was only $18 million. It's a bargain. Compact shelving with an automated retrieval system, meaning that it's locally stored, but it's going to be automated in terms of how you get it, it's going to be $36 million. So that's half the price of publicly or storing items in public shelves. They chose the $36 million option for one big reason, and that is the retrieval time. If it's off-site, you know, it's a 24-hour turnaround. If it's on-site, they found they could get it in 5 minutes. So with automated retrieval and these high capacity storage units, you can actually make your turnaround time to the customer way faster, and it's cheaper than keeping everything publicly available. One university I read about found that some of their students took as long as 30 minutes to locate an item on the shelf, which I found quite horrifying. So this would definitely save time. And things are going to be much like, even if there's, it doesn't matter if they are not quite filed properly, because the system keeps track of it. So my premise is we've now all instituted some kind of high-density storage. We've got the long tail, we've got the short tail. We've now made space to do lots more interesting things in our library for interesting things that create more of this library as a third place. This graphic is actually a picture of Stan. Does anybody know Stan? He lives at the Cerritos Library in California. He's actually a life-size replica of, I think it's a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but I'm not sure about that. But he's in a library, so that's one of the very interesting things you can do with your library space, if you like. Let's talk about some of the spaces that we need in our library. Teens need spaces. How many of you have been going to some, I saw a session on how to appeal to boys or something like that. There's all sorts of gaming sessions at the workshop. There's a whole new thing happening with kids and how they use the library. Just in the June issue of Public Libraries, I was reading it on the plane, a report came out that said that 63% of the teens' visits to the library are for the purpose of not finding information, but for socially interacting or for entertainment purposes. Now, you may not like that that's why they come to the library, but personally, I think that's a fine reason to come to the library. Come, connect to people, connect to resources, be in a safe place, do interesting things. So we need very different kinds of spaces to make that possible. Because for one thing, we also have these older people, like me, who, you know, like the idea of going into the library. They like the idea that, you know, these beautiful sunlit places, there's dark oak everywhere, I can go sit somewhere and read quietly. I'd like to have a click-free zone where I don't have to hear anybody typing on anything, I don't have to hear anyone talking on a cell phone. Now, how do you combine that with the teen space, right? You need more room. So that's another group of people that we need to accommodate. What about seniors? Seniors have yet another kind of need. I like the idea that, sure they might want to hang out in my space, my quiet, sunny places, but they could also have their own services if we really address them. They could have chairs that maybe weren't like the low-slung chairs that the teens are using that, you know, the older people wouldn't even be able to get in and out of. They could have their own computers, maybe pre-set up with big fonts and slow mouses. So there's things that we could do for seniors that we aren't necessarily doing today. And then, of course, there's kids' rooms. Lots of libraries have very happy, whimsical kids' spaces already. But there's, you know, we could do more with that. There could be little kid computers, more kid computers that are just computers that aren't really public access computers, just special computers for kids. I know of a library that keeps material by topic in the kids' room that is suitable for the kid and for the parent. So when the parents are hanging around, they can all kind of look up the same topics and find material that's suitable for parent and kid. So there's more creative things that we could do for those kids. We also need to be more thoughtful about our workers. Sometimes I see the spaces that workers get crammed into in the back room, and you know it's just mortifying why we get cranky librarians. I mean, if you look at these spaces. Why not let the workers have nice, you know, natural light and ergonomically suitable workspaces? A lot of the jobs that we do today are shared by people. We need to have desks that go up and down that can be used standing or sitting that really make sense for how we're using the people. I'm a big fan of carts, ergonomic carts that can be used to actually raise and lower carts. Like I said, I do work with materials handling, so if I see a librarian picking up a big bin and sticking it on a cart and then sitting down and working like this, somehow I'm just thinking that OSHA is not going to be happy with that. The other option is they put it on the ground, so they're reaching way low trying to get things. You know, it costs a couple $100 to have a cart that is actually adjustable electrically, so you could raise and lower the heights of those things. Things like that would be nice to have in our new workspaces. Another thing you can do with technology is provide more convenience to our customers. You know, people are busier than ever. Gas costs a fortune. Time is money. For some people, time is much more precious than money. And I think in many cases, those people are not using the library. So I'd like to see some of the things we do start taking advantage of technology to provide better services. The idea that we now allow people to place their own holds is a great thing, but the truth is, you know, so yeah, I've requested my hold online, now get your butt over to the library and come pick it up. You know, that's not very convenient. Or, as I call it, the come and get it service response, you know. So let's think about some ways that we could deliver material more conveniently. I'm a big fan of home delivery. Some people have been quietly doing home delivery for a long time. And in fact, a lot of people are starting to think about offering it. I thought it was really kind of revolutionary to think about home delivery until I found out that the Orange County Library in Florida has been doing it for some number of years. And in fact, they've figured out that it costs $2.63 per item to mail the books to their customers, including shipping and all overhead. So it doesn't have to be a big expensive proposition. I like the idea of offering special delivery. You know, we would have more business users, maybe more lawyers using our services if they could call up and say, yeah, this is the book I want, can you bring it over right away? I mean, you might have to charge them for it, but personally, I'm not opposed to charging. I'd rather offer the services, bring more people in, and charge them for the service to do that. I'd like to see more buying and drop ship instead of ordering something or getting it through interlibrary loan. Maybe it's $16, it takes 4 weeks. Why not buy a new copy of the thing and have it delivered to your customer directly from the vendor? I know one library is buying from a local bookstore who then directly delivers it. That's even better, then you've got the local economy involved. Personal delivery via Segway. I like that. North Carolina State's University is doing it already. I know that there was another public library, and I can't remember the name, but I love the image. This book being rushed to you by your library, and you know, and the Segway comes zooming in, and there it is. Big flag on the back, you know, waving. Another service I like is buy it via the library. Again, Orange County Library in Florida. These guys do great things. They've got a whole web area where you can buy books, buy movies, buy DVDs, ship them directly, set up your account, the whole thing. So you have the feeling that you've just, from your library website, you've kind of entered an Amazon.com-like place, and yet I'm still at the library. So this combines the best of all worlds, that idea that you can have real convenience, but you're still associating it with your library. So I really like that option. We could be expanding our library outlets. We've always had bookmobiles, and some bookmobiles are really cool and creative. I particularly like the bookmobiles that actually provide internet access. I know Mountain View, California, with help from Google, has a traveling bookmobile that they can go and park places and people can come in and use the computers for a while. But there's other things we can do. We could have information kiosks in malls or outside drugstores or other places. I like the idea of having some kind of dispenser for books. I was in an airport the other day, and the bookstore I was at allowed me to buy the book, and if I brought it back, I was going to get 50% back. And I thought, now there's a good idea. It's making it cheaper for me to just pick something up. It'd be even better if I could just borrow a book from the library at the bookstore and then return it after I get back from my trip. There's ways to get we want to get our libraries out into the world, not only online, but also physically. Topeka and Shawnee Library System has all these book drops that they offer, in addition to being able to return something by mail or to a library. They have 15 different book drops where you can just drop your return. That's one impediment. I mean, everybody hates to, turn something in late. Nobody wants to, be penalized. So make it easy. Take that impediment away from borrowing from the library. One more thing. Let's talk a little bit about technical staff. I'm a firm believer that the library has to really take control of the technology. And the more we realize that technology is infiltrated everything that we do in the library, the better we're going to be able to provide service. every library needs a strong technical staff. In fact, every library deserves a strong technical staff. That's how you start getting things done. My belief is that the days of the accidental systems librarian are over. Nowadays, there's so many kinds of training you need in order to be able to effectively use technology. I mean, I don't know how many of you are really aware of the technology that's in use in your library, but there's all sorts of training programs out there to keep your technical staff up to speed. If you have people who are just, you know, kind of the army of the willing and have said, well, I'll take care of the website, and they don't have some of these kind of certifications, you're not doing in your library what you could be doing because they don't know how to do it. So everybody needs to start looking at training and getting really serious about their technical staff. There's good jobs for librarians now that are also technical, and there can be really fun and creative. Librarians don't just have to be, you know, reference librarians, children's librarians, catalogers. They can also be website developers, interface specialists, usability consultants. They can be their software designers. I mean, there's lots of things that they can do. And every library needs to have a strong IT infrastructure. It's not just people taking care of the computers. You need desktop engineers. You need network engineers. You need people who know how to manage databases and have the training to do that. So with all of that, I believe that that's how you start taking control of technology and really start making a revolution. So please take control over the means of the production. Learn the skills. My belief is that we should be exploiting technology instead of people. And, you know, really controlling our own networks and just, again, like these people on this panel, write your own software. Why sit around waiting for the vendors to do it? Get the skills and do it yourself. But I don't want to forget why we're all here. These fit right in with the laws of the library science, our friend. We are still providing readers for every book or virtual book or ebook or whatever. We are still matching people to those resources, and we're saving the time of the user. We're using automation, we're using convenience, we're finding ways to do all the things that Ranganathan suggested way back then, and we certainly are a growing organism. So that's my pitch. Transform.